With that, we're going to get into it. My name is Jake Keeler. I'm the chair of the industry subcommittee for the AHA Governing Committee. I'm also on the BA Board of Directors. And my job, I'm the director of marketing for Brewers Supply Group. Along with me, we have Dr. Bart Watson, chief economist from the Brewers Association, and Steve Parr, the assistant director for the AHA. And the three of us are going to go through these slides and give this talk and touch on a few different things. Just a show of hands, who was here last year for this presentation? Oh, great. So maybe a little less than half. So for some of you, this may be new. There's a lot of information in these slides, a lot of data that we've pulled from different surveys, the retailer shop survey, a survey we did with SRG that Steve will talk about, some information that Bart will talk about that I'll talk about. Now, we're probably going to move through it fairly quickly. Of course, we will have a little Q&A at the end, but if you do have additional questions and you want to dive into a topic a little bit deeper, certainly come to us throughout the conference. We will be available for questions. You'll see us around, okay? So with no further comments to be made, we're going to get into it. This is the 2016 State of the Homebrew Industry presentation. Some of the things, and this is going to be the case for all the industry tracks that you're going to be involved in, but probably it's going to be mostly applicable to this one. We have some antitrust guidelines for these meetings. We cannot discuss any of the following topics, and I'll let you read that really quickly. Usually the things that kind of get tricky are when somebody starts to want to talk about pricing, price fixing, or collusion over pricing. And then also, you know, when we start talking about targeting certain customer segments or excluding certain customer segments. So if conversations or questions start kind of leaning towards there, one of the three of us will probably step in and just say, hey, you know what, we can't talk about that. You want to have that conversation, go have it on your own with whoever you want to have it with, but not here. Just to give you a little context of the industry subcommittee, the AHA Governing Committee, to back up a little bit, is a group of people from the homebrew community that have been elected by members to represent member concerns to the AHA and the BA. The industry subcommittee is a kind of a breakoff of that, which mostly consists of a few GC members and then a few AHA staff and then a bunch of people from the industry. So we've got a pretty wide selection of people that represent everything from small retailers, large retailers, wholesalers, distributors, manufacturers. If you are interested in joining that subcommittee, I'm the person to talk to. I'm certainly interested in people who have perspectives and input. And even if you don't want to join the subcommittee, but you have ideas that you'd like us to discuss and think about. What is our purpose? We were formed in when this used to be called the National Homebrewers Conference in 2010. And really our primary goal is to foster better communication between the AHA and the industry entities like yourselves, as well as provide resources, assistance, and guidance to the AHA based on concerns brought forward by said members of the homebrewing industry. Some of the initiatives over last year and this year, we continue to expand programming for retailers at HomebrewCon. This has been a pretty successful thing for you guys and for the AHA. We'll continue to do this and expand the programming as we can. We review and develop questions for the annual industry survey. So we kind of go over that, you know, the retailer survey or the quarterly survey that we put out to say, are there questions we should be asking or should we tweak these questions? Are there new trends we should be looking at and putting out there? And then three, develop methods, campaigns, and ways to promote the hobby and activity of homebrewing on a national level. It's something we're looking at quite a bit right now is what can we do either collectively and or with the AHA to promote the hobby and activity of homebrewing. Like I said, this week all the talks are going to take place in this room. So today we have the State of the Homebrew Industry. Right after this talk, we've got a Brewing on Premise, the Evolution of the Revolution on Friday. Supply chain strategies for managing inventory, and then that's followed by big party, big money. And then on Saturday, we have building your homebrew community. And I believe all of the Friday talk starts at 9, followed by 10:15, and the Saturday talk is at 9. So they kind of follow that same. They start at 9, then followed by that 10:15. Pretty easy to remember, but it's all in the program, of course. With all of that, I'm going to hand things over to Steve Parr to review the data from the industry overview.
Thank you much. Thank you very much, Jay. Can you guys hear me all right? A tall guy is kind of struggling on these podiums here. Jake mentioned, my name is Steve Parr. I'm the Assistant Director of the American Homebrewers Association. Our goal with this first section is to take a look at the 2016 Homebrew Supply Shop Survey, try to compare it to some of the past year's surveys, and take a look at what's going on in homebrewing, specifically at the retail level. And so as you mentioned, we're going to go through some of this stuff pretty quickly so we can make sure we hit some of the big points later on. But we are recording all of these seminars and all these presentations. So the slides and everything that we're saying right now is going to be sent out to you guys after the presentation. So you'll have that opportunity to go back and look at it a little bit more in depth. So we'll paint a little bit of a picture of our typical respondents. We had 237 responses this year, so a nice little sample size. That's roughly a third of all the homebrew retailers that we have in our database. Shops from 42 states participated, so representation from every region of the U.S. And 89% of those responding indicated that they're primarily selling home beverage making supplies as their source of income. So that other 11%, different types of businesses like gardening stores, hardware supply stores. We've seen a lot of breweries nowadays that are starting to carry home beverage making ingredients. But we've seen the percentage of those that primarily focus on homebrew increase over the last few years. On average, respondents have been open for about 10 years. You'll see in a lot of these slides that I include the median figures because that does paint a little bit of a different picture of our respondents, especially as we have a wide variety of different types of businesses. You can see that within our average, it's being skewed up a little bit by some of the older shops. So that median figure, painting a picture of that middle-of-the-road typical homebrew shop that's participating in the survey. 32% been open for 3 years or less, with 7% being open for a year or less, so a large chunk of our respondents having been open just within the last 2 to 3 years. And so we see that with our shop openings. One of the first questions that we ask in the survey is, how has the number of home beer and wine retailers in your area changed over the last year? So this is looking at the last 4 years of responses to those surveys. You can see, so our blue line representing increased, red line being responses reporting a decrease in retailers, and that black line saying no change in the last year. So 2013, 2014, 2015, 50% or more of those responding to the survey indicated that there was a new shop opening up in their area. So the industry has seen some pretty incredible growth in the number of businesses offering home beverage making supplies just within the last few years. But you can see our most recent survey has shown something a little bit different. About a quarter of responses still reporting an increase in new shops, but we've seen a corresponding increase in the number of retailers seeing no real change, and even a slight uptick in those reporting a decrease of shops in their area. So we're starting to see shops closing. I think it's a healthy sign for the industry to start seeing some of these openings level off. So the AHA database, to give you guys some context, we track the number of shops that we have in the U.S. We grew by about 22 retailers in the U.S., up to 815 homebrew retailers at the end of 2015. That takes into account 61 closures. That's more than three times what we've seen in the previous years. And so I think we're going to start to see that a little bit more and more. Next thing we do is take a look at beginner beer equipment kit sales. So asking, over the past 12 months, have your sales increased, decreased, or stayed the same? So same thing here. Blue line representing an increase, red line those reporting a decrease, and black line no change over the last year. And this is looking at the last 5 years' worth of survey responses. We've seen in some of our previous presentations and surveys that time constraints and greater access to quality beer are contributing to fewer people potentially entering the hobby. And I think on that same note, playing into the mix here is with some new brewing techniques like small batch brewing, brew in a bag, it's easier for beginners to get started without that traditional beginner kit, and that's impacting some of these beginner kit sales here. We do ask retailers to actually provide that year-over-year change in what they're seeing in their beginner kit sales, and so that's represented on that right-hand side there. 2012, 2013, 2014, we've had some pretty considerable double-digit growth figures in those beginner kit sales. But our most recent survey is painting a little bit of a different picture again. Even looking at the median, you know, we're seeing some flat sales and in many cases a decline in beginner beer kits. We also take a look at the wine equipment kit sales. So again, those beginner kits, being reported as somewhat slower than previous years, but not as much as beer. In the 2016 survey, 48% of retailers were seeing growth in beginner beer kits, whereas 53% are doing so in wine, so they're a little bit more on par now. We continue to track what percentage of purchases are made up of malt extract, and we're seeing a trend continue, and that being a continued shift away from malt extract. Now, it's not depicted on this slide, but we always take a look at what percentage of retailers are attributing 50% or more of their ingredient sales coming from malt extract. In our 2012 survey, looking back at 2011 data, 70% of the retailers participating in the survey indicated that at least half of all their ingredient sales were malt extract. In this most recent survey, that's down to exactly half, 35% of those respondents, seeing at least half of their ingredient sales being malt extract. So we're continuing to see that shift away from malt extract and more homebrewers participating in all grain. So part of the reason why we're seeing this, we as homebrewers have techniques available to us that don't necessarily require as much time or equipment to brew that all-grain batch of beer. You know, things like brew in a bag or batch sparging allow homebrewers to brew all-grain recipes without the same level of investment or equipment. And so in many ways, we're seeing this simplification of what was previously a more advanced type of brewing. I think for many of us, when we get started in homebrewing, you start off brewing extracts, and then as you advance within the hobby, kind of perfect that brewing technique, you jump into all grain as the more advanced style, but that's not necessarily the case anymore. With the amount of information out there, quality ingredients, information, people are advancing within the hobby much faster than ever before, and in many cases, jumping right into all grain. But while we're seeing that simplification of how people brew, we're also seeing this increase in the level of equipment that's being made available to homebrewers. So on the left, we see there's kind of that standard three-tier all-grain system, right? So this really appeals to the highly technical. We see a lot of engineers in homebrewing. But on the right side, it's something a little bit different. This is maybe for those that care less about the technical side of homebrewing, but more so just enjoy beer. And we're seeing a number of these devices that come out that are aiming to make the process easier. You walk around the Homebrew Expo this week, and we're going to see a lot of pieces of equipment that are being made available to our customers that change the way we brew. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it certainly does have the potential to change the dynamic of what people are talking about, what you guys as retailers are offering, and what our customers are talking about. Survey data indicates that the rate of customer visits is decreasing and has been over the last few years. Why? Well, one thing is customers are brewing less frequently. Different brewing methods. So if people are indeed doing more and more all-grain batches, this takes more time. And that's something that they've indicated that they don't necessarily have much of anymore. Another thing is, with a number of shop openings in the last few years, our customers have options available to them. And they're doing their research and they're shopping around. We're seeing a shift to a younger brewing demographic. So this is looking at the last 4 years. We didn't ask this question in 2015, so we obviously didn't include it in there, but retailers are increasingly reporting a younger brewing demographic. And we'll take a look at this a little bit later on, but in some of our past surveys where we've broken out homebrewing demographics, the millennial generation is increasingly becoming more highly represented. And so it's going to be our job to make sure that as these new homebrewers get into the hobby, that we're keeping them in there, and they're going to keep up with their brewing process. So we're going to take a little bit of a deep dive into our gross revenue figures, and I included this one just for kind of a visual effect of looking at the last 7 years of our surveys, a little bit of the roller coaster ride that retailers have experienced. So this is each of the individual surveys over the last 7 years, the individual year-over-year average change that retailers were reporting in their gross revenue. 2009 up to 2013, some pretty considerable double-digit growth figures, and things have leveled off a little bit. In our 2016 survey, we asked retailers to provide us with their 2015, 2014, as well as 2013 revenue, so we have the same respondents providing data for each of these revenue figures, so it's a little bit more easily comparable, but as we've done in past years, we break out this revenue data into different groups depending on the type of business. So starting with all shops, all responses to the survey, and then narrowing it down from there. Again, these figures represent a change. So it's a year-over-year change from the previous year's revenue figures. And it paints a much different picture. than what we've seen in the past few years. If you've seen a slowdown in sales in your shop, you're not alone. Taking a little bit more of a deeper dive, 24% of respondents indicated they saw 10% or more growth in 2015. 15% of those participating saw 20% or more growth. So still, you know, there's some retailers out there that are still seeing growth. But 55% of those participating in our 2016 survey indicated a decline. And of those retailers reporting a decline, they saw about a 9.5% decrease from the previous year. I did want to step back and take a look at the median data, though, as it does, again, paint a little bit of a different picture, looking at that middle-of-the-road response. And so, doesn't take into account some of the high or low end that might be skewing those averages. And when you look at the medians, it doesn't necessarily paint as much of a bleak picture. We're seeing more kind of flat, single-digit growth figures. And so we always want to take a mention of that, and so we can look at the typical respondent and what they're experiencing. We did just wrap up our first quarterly survey. So some of the feedback that we've gotten from retailers on the surveys that we've completed is that they wanted more rapid turnarounds, more frequent surveys that they can use to impact their businesses. And so looking at the first quarter, it's off to a much slower start than 2015. All shops across the board were reporting about a 5% decline compared to the first quarter of 2015. That last group, looking at, so that's primarily homebrew supplies, businesses that do less than 70% or more of their business from online or mail order, and those that have been open for at least 5 years, we're seeing double digits and a drop from the previous year. So major survey takeaways from this last year: overall slowing of growth in revenue, and in some cases a decrease in revenue year over year. Nearly half, 48% of retailers, are still seeing growth in beginner kits, but this is much less than in past years. And you know, fewer people getting into the hobby could potentially play a role, but so is changes in preferred brewing techniques and how people are making their beer. The average customer frequency is reportedly down, and we're also seeing a continued shift to more ingredient purchases being all grain-based than malt extracts. And then lastly, recent years have indicated a substantial number of shop openings, and we're starting to see that level off a little bit. So I'm going to pass it off now to my colleague Bart, and he's going to take a step back and take a look at what's going on at just the retail level.
Thanks, Steve. So I'm going to do something similar to what I did last year for those who were here last year, which is kind of take a 30,000-foot view and try to put what's going on in a much broader context. So the first thing I want to talk about is just kind of general retail competition. And the one thing that this doesn't have on here is competition within goods. So obviously consumers have a certain amount of money to spend. Are they spending it on home brewing? Are they spending it on, you know, going to the movies? Are they spending it on, I don't know, whatever the kids are into these days? And so this is just more kind of general, assuming one set of goods, you know, how do you compete in retail? And there are a number of ways to compete in retailing. One, and this has become one of the primary ones in more general merchandise retailing, is price. This is something that almost no one in this room is going to be able to compete against the real big retailers on, because the scale is just another level. I wrote down just a couple of notes to give you a sense of the scale of some of the global companies who have come in at least into intro-level homebrewing equipment because it's a big enough business now that they can pay attention to it. Amazon has a warehouse here in Baltimore. It's 1 million square feet. It's 23 acres. I don't think any of you have a warehouse that size. Walmart, now in the U.S., sells about $300 billion in goods. That means they sell the equivalent of the entire homebrew industry in a single day. So the scale of these retailers is on another level. So you can kind of throw out the window being able to compete on price. There are other things you can compete on, though. And I think some of these, you know, signal good things and some of these signal bad things for a homebrew shop retailers. Convenience is a mixed bag. You're going to be the local store for the vast majority of homebrew consumers. That said, I've got the little, you know, press button for shopping cart. Things, you know, e-commerce really changes the game. And it's something that people have to be aware about and thinking about. You know, I can order basically anything I want at midnight in my boxers on my couch now. You have to think about ways that aren't just convenience in terms of geographic, but, you know, why does somebody need to come into my store that's different than I'm just the closest? I mean, 10 or 15 years ago, being the closest was all that mattered, and I'll show you a graph that shows e-commerce taking off. But now it's really about driving them to their store and showing them that there's a lot of value in getting you there. Selection is something certainly the average homebrew shop can still compete on. That's becoming less true. When you have a million-square-foot warehouse, you can really stock a lot of goods. And we are seeing kind of these general merchandise retailers getting further down into homebrew catalogs. That said, I don't think you're going to see, you know, Amazon carrying the range of things that a homebrew shop can carry. You're a specialized retailer, and so selection is still going to be a really important part of your competitive set. And then the last component, and this is the one where the people in this room can still, you know, really compete and really win, is by adding value. So a lot of the third part of this talk is going to get back to that. How do you do things that engage your community, that show them the value of your shop? How do you, you know, have events? How do you, you know, we're going to have a brew on premise is the next talk. How do you do that and add value to the shop that way? Do you, you know, bundle packages together and provide a service with your goods? You know, maybe you, you know, you find that a lot of people are coming in and asking about, you know, a Pliny the Elder clone beer. And so you've prepackaged those goods so people with less time can come in and say, here's the recipe, take it home, brew it. Just to put in kind of in context, homebrewing shops have had a really good run of it of late. We saw Steve's data until last year, you know, a lot of double-digit growth in there. And that's against the general trend that we've seen for homebrew shops would end up in government data in that middle line, the middle color, the brown line there, hobby, toy, and game stores. And so if we look over the last 25 years, we can see that in general, total retail has been growing, and that growth has generally gone to general merchandise stores. So these are big box stores, your Walmarts, so on and so forth. I added hobby, toy, and game stores because that's where homebrew shops would be categorized in the government data. So relative to other hobby shops, homebrew shops are doing really, really well. So you can feel good about that. Clearly, there's been a growing demographic there. Within this category, we've seen a shift in dollars toward a product, homebrew products that people are interested in. But in general, specialty stores have had a tough go of it of late. That's because of what I just talked about. They can't compete on price against these big guys. They're having more trouble competing on selection against retailers that have unlimited warehouse space, can stock everything under the sun. And so the ones that are being successful, the ones like homebrew shops that have offered a new product, that have offered some value add. I didn't add e-commerce yet, because I wanted, for dramatic effect, to put it on a different slide. Here's when you put in e-commerce, and this is index sales. So Amazon started in 1994, and you can kind of see e-commerce with a couple of blips around the first dot-com bubble, and then the Great Recession has pretty much just grown at a tremendous rate. This isn't going to stop. E-commerce is going to be more and more important part of the U.S. economy going forward. I think that's virtually guaranteed. You know, I think you have to look at your shop and see whether it makes sense to factor into this. But this is the way that the U.S. economy and the U.S. retail economy is going. So it's worth keeping in mind and thinking about. These are indexed, so that's not necessarily saying that e-commerce is, you know, that much more than general merchandise stores. But if we set everybody equal to 192, this is their relative size now. One good sign is that in real terms, spending on entertainment, which I think homebrewing should fall into this category, has stayed pretty constant. Sometimes you worry that, you know, everything you hear about the economy, that maybe people are just spending less money in general. They aren't, and what we've seen since kind of there was a slowdown, certainly in the Great Recession, but those levels are picking back up, and I'd expect them to return back to that 3,000 level within at least a couple of years, assuming no other major economic hiccups. You know, this is what you're competing for. You're competing for the average American spending about, you know, $2,500 to $3,000 a year on entertainment. Homebrewers tend to be a little bit more affluent on average, so maybe a little bit more. But you're competing with a whole bunch of people who are looking to to get this money. You know, they've got a certain amount of money that consumers can spend, and they're going to spend it on, you know, homebrewing or a trip to SeaWorld or, you know, something else. One of the challenges homebrewing has faced, and this is my update of a slide that I did last year, is that while the economy has recovered, people have more time, or excuse me, have more money, they have less time. And so I'm going to close with this as kind of my final thought. That, you know, one thing, and we saw this very clearly from Steve's data, that, you know, rates of visits have decreased. People have said that they have less time. And not all homebrewers are white males, but I've put white male unemployment up here because the vast majority of the homebrewing community is still white and male. AHA is doing as much as they can to change that. But if you look at this, this is Google searches for how to homebrew mapped against white male unemployment since the beginning of 2006. And, you know, you don't have to be an economist to see that there's a pretty tight relationship here. I've extended out a year from what I showed last year, and the relationship has held perfectly. And while, you know, the latest job reports maybe gave you hopes for another little spike in unemployment, what this shows is that your core consumers have less time. And so when you're thinking about how to offer things to them, you know, you have a couple of options. You know, one is to show them that it's really worth spending their precious time, which they have less on homebrewing. And another is find ways to make it more convenient for them to homebrew. You know, if they're going to come into your shop, how can you reduce the amount of time they spend there where they're still spending the same amount of on goods? How can you show them easy ways to do homebrewing faster or make the process more efficient? How can you show them that in their busy lives where they're now working 40 hours a week or 60 hours a week, because a lot of people in the U.S. economy are working more than one job, how can you show them that they should spend that time that they have less of on the activity that is going to make your shop run? And I think that's we're going to close with some of those thoughts on how to engage your customers a little bit more going forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Bart. So now I'm going to talk about what's going on here in the market, and probably most importantly, what can we do, what can you do to adjust to that shifting landscape? I'm going to talk a little bit about potential market factors, and we have touched on these. Steve has touched on this. Bart touched on this, and I'm going to try to summarize it a bit for you guys. You know, there are more shops than there used to be. There's a leveling off of those shops, but there are more shops out there, so there's more competition. You can't just be the local shop and just say, "Well, I'm the shop around town, so I'm the one that's going to get the business." And furthermore, to Bart's point, e-commerce is huge and it's growing. There's not a consumer out there who hasn't purchased something online or who hasn't at least done some research online to research a product before they buy it. Consumers are online. That's where they are, right? That's where they're getting their information. That's where they're getting their data. That's where they're doing their research. Yes, you may still need to go, so to speak, kick the tires on something, but you're probably going to go to a website to research that purchase before you even go see it physically face-to-face. It's a different demographic, as Steve pointed out. It's shifting to a younger demographic, the millennials, which I believe is 21 to 35, somewhere around in there. So to think of it as like 20-somethings and 30-somethings, right? Maybe even skewing a little older. Obviously not skewing any younger for you guys. There's more access to beer. Craft beer is everywhere. We've got, on average, 2 new breweries opening up a day. A lot of those breweries are small tap rooms, small brew pubs, small breweries that are opening up in small communities. So access to beer is pretty much a given. So the old argument that, you know, well, I went to Belgium, I found these beers, and I came home, I just couldn't find them home, so I started brewing myself, doesn't exist anymore. That impetus, that reasoning for getting into the hobby or continuing to make your own beer doesn't exist. So it's gone. I don't think it's coming back. As we've been pointing out, people have less time and they have more disposable income. So as people are going back to work or they're working 2 jobs, they've got disposable income so they can spend it on that ubiquitous craft beer that's just down the street, the tap room that's 3 blocks away. And they have less time so that, you know, one thing to consider is that your customers now have a strong appreciation for the value of their time, and you need to keep that under consideration when you're approaching them with your sales and your products. You know, their time is very valuable at this moment, so why should they spend a Saturday, whether it's 3 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, to brew the beer, and then another couple of hours later on to bottle it, condition it, transfer it, whatever they might do. And then lastly, there's a changing approach and a changing perspective on what home brewing is to the average consumer. Now, the people that are here at this conference, they're hobbyists. They're lifestyle homebrewers, right? Homebrewing is probably so much a part of their life that they have decided to take X amount of days out of their summer, probably their summer vacation, to come here to this conference. Now, the 40-some thousand AHA members, they're also probably hobbyists, lifestyle homebrewers. The potential millions of people out there that could homebrew, they see homebrewing as an activity, not as a hobby, not as a lifestyle. So are you selling a hobby or a lifestyle, or are you selling an activity? And that's something you need to consider when somebody walks through your door. So where's the hobby going? On one side, you've got what I would argue is an activity. And on one side, you have a lifestyle. Which one looks like an activity? Which one looks like a lifestyle? It's really fun, I think, for retailers to sell the lifestyle, to sell the hobby. And you as retailers, I'm sure you're all, you know, you geek out about the automated system, the more advanced and complex ways of brewing and how far that hobby and that passion can take you. But a lot of people coming into your store, they just want to make beer, right? And there are more and more of those people, and there's a finite number of people that are willing to do what the person is doing on the right side. That's a finite number of consumers, whereas the consumers on the left side, we're talking about millions of people. That's in the thousands on the right. That's millions to the left. So, when I think of this, I think of small batch brewing, brew in a bag, that trend towards all grain. A lot of that has to do with those smaller, simplified brewing techniques. Automated brewing, that's a new market. It's a different customer. You're going to see, as Steve pointed out, some brewing systems that are going to be on display here that I encourage all of you to take a look at. I think over the next 1 to 2 years, automated brewing is going to be becoming a larger and larger part of the market out there and a larger component to what home brewing is in the U.S. and worldwide. And that's something that we all need to pay attention to. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. There's a move away from DIY equipment towards higher-end equipment and gadgets. So, do I have the time to make this myself, or can I just purchase this, right? I have disposable income. I do not have time. What does that translate to? Are they going to weld it themselves, or are they going to use that disposable income to just buy the gadget? Ingredients, there's a demand for variety, quality, and items that are popular and or scarce. So, the average home brewer can find out, they can do the same research that a craft brewer can do and say, I want that same malt that the craft brewers are using. I want that same hop that the craft brewers are using, that yeast strain. Oh, there's a new yeast lab. I'm going to call up that new yeast lab, and I'm going to get a slant, and I'm going to propagate some of my own yeast. So variety is very important. And if you don't have variety in your shop, somebody's going to have that online. Somebody's going to be carrying it so that the consumer can get it if they want it. So if you don't have it, they will go elsewhere. The hobbyists out there, they're dedicated hobbyists, but that number, again, is finite. Where the growing segment is the people that want to give homebrewing a try, but they want to keep it easy. They don't want it to take a lot of time. They don't want to buy into a lifestyle or a hobby. They just want to give homebrewing a try. So what can we do to wade these waters? And that's not a homebrew shop down there. That's Willems and Sonoma. They kind of deal in a similar space. Now, obviously, they've been very successful all over the country. But look how nice that is. Isn't that a nice-looking retail location? Isn't that inviting? Doesn't that just make you want to go in there, look at things, maybe buy something that you had no intention of buying, like a $100 spaghetti strainer? So my advice to you is that we need to focus on being an excellent retailer first. That needs to be your first objective. Before, we're a homebrew shop, okay? Now, being a great homebrew shop is like nipping at the heels of being a great retailer, but you need to be a great retailer. And what does that mean? What can you do to be a great retailer? Well, last year we had a few talks to deal with that. We'll have some more talks that'll touch on this. But things like keeping your store clean, moving your product selection around, Maybe investing in better lighting for your shop, a new paint job, better signage. There are some simple things that you can do. Just go to any of these shops. You think if it's, you go into some place and you think it's a good retail experience, what are they doing? What are they doing different than your shop? What are those, some of those things that you can do? Now, some of these might be just an investment of time. Some might be an investment of money. And you guys can make that call on whether or not you think it's worth the time and the money. But I absolutely think that if you're going to expand your customer base and you're going to convert more people to the activity of homebrewing, you need to make it a good retail experience. Vary your offerings. You know, maybe you've had a lot of success with extract kits, or you've had a lot of success with a particular line of ingredients or equipment, but maybe that's not what the average consumer wants anymore. Maybe they want a little more options. Maybe they want something different. So it's imperative as the landscape is shifting that you're looking at your product offering and saying, you know, what is not doing well? Analyze the sales data and say, if this isn't doing well, maybe we should move this off the floor and bring something else in. And maybe that's even moving outside of beer making or wine making. I know a lot of you probably carry cheese making or other fermentation goods, but maybe you vary those retail goods so that you're bringing in different types of consumers and you're making some secondary and tertiary sales. I think there's probably something to be said about having less of an emphasis on extract kits and 5-gallon starter kits. You know, those have been the staple of our industry for so long. You'd sell these 5-gallon starter kits around Christmas time. Then around, first quarter and second quarter, those customers would start coming in and buying the 5-gallon extract kits. It was a pretty good thing. You know, really good growth in the fourth quarter, and then you have that long tail following it for years until maybe they graduated to all grain, and then they bought, some kegs and the draft system. It was a pretty good system. You know, consumers aren't following that same pathway. You know, they might have started with a 1-gallon all-grain kit, so they're moving right past. You've lost now. With that, you've lost that 5-gallon starter kit sale. You've lost that extract kit sale. There's good margins in those products, right? So you need to figure out, boy, am I giving up so much square feet to these products that I'm no longer, selling as much, and what could replace those products? Now, I think they still have a place within the market, but you need to consider that. The data shows the extract sales going down. Data shows those starter kits going down. That doesn't necessarily mean there are less people getting into the hobby. It may actually mean that they're just starting in a different fashion, right? They're going into that 1-gallon all-grain kit, and that's how they get started. And we need to step up our game with new customer acquisition. You know, the fact of the matter is that you cannot rely on an organic flow of people just coming into your shop because they heard about homebrewing and they got interested in it. For a long time, it seemed that homebrewing was enjoying these tailwinds of craft beer. As craft beer was kind of rising, homebrewing was rising right along with it. There's some truth to that, but I think craft brewing's kind of gone off in its own direction while leaving homebrewing kind of sitting there. People are not going to just come into your shop because they're interested in craft beer. Some will, but we need to be more aggressive about customer acquisition. We need to be actively going out there, whether that's through marketing in your local community, it's through social media, it's throwing events that appeal to that group, maybe throwing events that aren't as much even focused on home brewing, but they're just focused on beer. You know, grab those people from your community, get them into your shop, then turn them on to the hobby. The first and foremost, you got to get them in. You got to have something that gets them in. Then you can start, pitching whatever you're pitching to them. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Steve to talk about one specific opportunity that we've identified.
All right. Thank you, Jake. I'm trying to redeem myself a little bit from some of the survey data that we had presented, present you guys with an opportunity. And so I talked during last year's presentation about how the AHA was working with a strategy and communications firm that was working to conduct market research that would aid the association understanding consumer behaviors and trends and perceptions about homebrewing. And part of doing so was creating this profile of a potential demographic for people that would be interested in homebrewing. And interestingly, they're right under our noses. It's craft beer drinkers. 1,000 craft beer drinkers were surveyed, and so 17% of them indicated they currently brew their own beer at home. Another 14% indicated that they've tried homebrewing before and no longer do it. Now, the part that we care about is this next chunk. 41% indicated in their quote, "I'm very interested in homebrewing, but have never done it before." This is our next target market. The most highly responded option out of these 1,000 home or craft beer drinkers indicated that within the craft beer drinking segments, there's a major chunk of people that are interested in homebrewing and have never done it before. And so we're going to take a look at them in a little bit more detail. And I see here that we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to allow some time for questions. So we're going to go through this pretty quickly. But again, there's a lot of information on these next few slides. All of this is being made available to you guys after the conference. So you'll have some opportunities to look at it yourself. So within craft beer drinkers, those that are interested in homebrewing are much more likely to be participating in craft-related activities. And so when I say that, I mean participating in conversations about craft beer with their friends, trying new brands, trying new styles, talking about it on social media, and even attending events. So the big point is that we've already identified that there's this big chunk of craft beer drinkers that are interested in homebrewing. Now we know that they're also the type of craft beer drinker that's more routinely participating in these activities. And so how do we get in front of them? Well, let's get homebrewing in front of craft beer. Let's connect the dots between the two. You know, get our businesses out at craft beer events. Interestingly, that 17% of craft beer drinkers that are actually already homebrewing, they're much more likely to be pretty new to craft beer. That group skewed heavily towards only having started drinking craft beer within the last 3 years or less. That 41% that's interested in homebrewing, much more likely to have been drinking craft for a while, anywhere from 4 to 10 years. And so we can assume maybe this is a little bit of an older group of craft drinkers, likely have some more disposable income. And interestingly, the survey says that, you know, that cost savings argument that many people have advertised homebrewing with in the past doesn't really apply to this group. Only 9% indicated that the cost savings of homebrewing is really a motivating statement for them to get into the hobby. Looking more at those motivating statements, so what was appealing to the homebrewing about that group allows them to make their own version of their favorite beers. So again, they've been drinking craft beer from anywhere from 4 to 10 years. They're probably very well educated about what they like to drink, about different styles of craft beer. And the ability to make their own versions of those styles that they like appeals to them, but also allowing them to create custom beers that are not commercially available, so experimentation, and allowing them to explore their creative side. So creativity, customization, replicating favorite beer styles. These are common motivating themes when craft beer drinkers consider homebrewing. Craft beer drinkers that are interested in the hobby are also more likely to know somebody that's currently homebrewing. 72% of that 41% already know a homebrewer. In many ways, our customers, our club members, our members of the AHA are some of our greatest advocates. So let's get them talking about homebrewing. You know, perhaps you're hosting an event at your business where you're inviting them to bring a friend that's new to the hobby and inviting them to participate. As Jake mentioned, you know, part of the problem is there's a little bit of an intimidation factor. Time and general process continue to be some of the most highly common perceived barriers among people getting into the hobby. And so, you know, this notion that you have to have fancy equipment or that it's going to be a heavy investment in time as well as money to make your own beer. And we all know that homebrewing can be simple and easy. And not even just when you're introducing new people into the hobby. I think when you're talking to your existing customer base, and if they're not brewing as often as they'd like to be, encourage them to try an extract batch. You know, I know there's a little bit of a perception amongst homebrewers that extract brewing doesn't make as quality of beers, and that's not necessarily the case anymore. Gary Glass was recently at the Pacific Northwest Homebrewers Conference, and it was Steve Bader of Bader Brewing Supply that had a brewing demonstration. It was actually a blind tasting. It was a pale ale, and he had everyone attending the booth taste the beer, so it was an extract version as well as an all-grain version, and 54% were able to correctly identify which style was which. But more interestingly and coincidentally, 54% actually preferred that extract version. And so, again, lots of information on this slide, but the firm that we worked with took all the data of these 41% of craft beer drinkers that are interested in homebrewing and classified them as these creative explorers and summarized all the different ways that we can reach out to them. And I'm not going to go through all the different examples they provided here. I'm going to leave it to you guys to review these slides and take a look at them. But couple examples of the highlights. Creative explorers are social, seeking adventure and variety, so our communications should be equally as vibrant, talking about events, social opportunities to connect homebrewing. They're interested in food, foreign cultures, art, and travel, so encourage them to go down the rabbit hole of homebrewing and connect beer, and more specifically homebrew, to this desire for worldly travel and new experiences. They're affluent and ambitious, so they have disposable income to spend not only on craft but new hobbies. They participate in a multitude of hobbies, but the competition side of things really appealed less to this group, but they still have a desire to refine the process and their proficiency within the hobbies that they participate in. They're very active and easy to reach online. You know, they use the internet to research products. And so, you know, if you guys don't have an internet presence, you need to have one. Putting together an effective media plan that can leverage these types of attitudes can help you reach these creative explorers. And then lastly, they're cooking frequently, pairing foods with beverages. So when we talk about diversifying your offerings, you know, how can you be a resource for food and beer pairings, and more specifically creating it? So a couple major takeaways. The four main points that came out of creating this demographic profile: 41% of craft beer drinkers are interested in trying to homebrew. They indicated that the creativity, interesting process resulting in unique beers were the most common motivating statements in why they're considering getting into the hobby. So these need to be at the forefront of our communications. Those interested in homebrewing they're more involved with craft beer. Everything from consumption, talking about it in social media, going to events. So let's get homebrewing as part of those activities. And then lastly, they're more likely to be involved with current homebrewers. So let's get our customers and our members talking about homebrewing to their craft beer drinking friends. Those most interested are motivated by the new experience and hands-on process. So we'll want to feature that, but this process that excites and interests craft beer drinkers is also one of our biggest barriers. And so we want to make sure that when we're presenting homebrewing, that we present it as a simple, easy, and fun activity. So thank you guys for coming. We're going to hang out for a little bit and answer some questions again. We have the microphone in the middle there, so please use that microphone so that we can record the questions and answers that are being put out there. Thanks so much. Don't be shy.
I got a question.
Sure.
I'm curious, from the perception of retailers, what is the role of product innovation, or what could be the role of product innovation in reversing some of these negative trends? And is there a forum that's out there so retailers and innovators can communicate on the products that may be needed to help attract more brewers or to get lapsed home brewers back? I just wonder, is there any kind of infrastructure out there to really facilitate communication between the people selling the products and developing the products? And if not, should there be? Thank you.
I think that's a great point. And I guess there's not a formal, you know, forum where you can go. There is a forum on the website, but I think probably the most effective way to do that is to talk to your distributor, whether that's, say, the person that's providing the ingredients or the equipment that you're purchasing from, or the manufacturers that you're working with, to say they want to hear that. They want to hear from the retailers to say, hey, my customers are coming in, or I feel like and they're asking for X, or I feel like I'm losing sales on this product. Like, it's just been trending down. What can we do to reverse that? That feedback is invaluable to those people on the distribution side, on the manufacturing side. You know, attending this conference is a great way to do that. Walk around that trade show and see who's doing what, to see, are these people we could partner with? Are these people we could communicate to? Because, yeah, you're right. I mean, and I think that is happening to some extent, but development needs to happen to reverse some of these trends. If consumers are there and there's proof that there is a large segment of people that are interested in homebrewing just waiting to be tapped into. But I think what's been the challenge is, how can we position homebrewing either from a perception or a marketing standpoint or through the products that we offer to be attractive to those consumers?
Morning. So I'm here with the Vessi Fermenter and Dispenser, and we're part of the, you know, trying to help the brewing industry not change it, but help attract that 41% you're talking about or those millions. So from a manufacturer perspective, I just wanted to ask the question to you guys and probably speak on behalf. This is our first time here, but basically, how do you recommend we get involved and how do we help? And you briefly touched on that, but even from a distribution perspective, is it preferred that we have a direct connection with the retailers, or do we work through the distributors? And you're talking about the e-commerce portion, so are you guys not interested in holding inventory, so we should make everything kind of e-commerce focused? But
I would say from a distributor's, wholesaler's perspective, that's up to you. that's something that, you know, an environment like this, you need to talk to a lot of people and have those conversations and figure out what is the best direction to, you know, take your product to market.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what we want to do is we want to get those. We all are collectively interested in getting new products and innovative products in the hands of those consumers, right? The pathway there can be varied, and, you know, every business is going to do it differently. But I absolutely believe that every single person in this room benefits, including the AHA and the BA, benefits from driving interest into home brewing. We all benefit from that. We're all going to be winners to some degree. So I think the mechanics of how that happens is up to each retailer, manufacturer, distributor. But I think at the end of the day, yes, we do compete when we're in the marketplace, but we're talking about elevating this hobby and this activity for everyone. And there are so many potential consumers out there that we're all going to benefit from that. So,
okay. All right. Well, I'll look forward
to
talking to you.
Sorry, it's a slightly political answer.
Stumped. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming, guys. You know, I hope you'll use this as the launching point for some of the other seminars that are taking place for the industry track. A lot of these talks that we have coming are talking about reaching out to new customers, you know, putting on events for re-energizing your current customer base. And so I think that's going to be a good kind of continuation of some of the ideas that we've carried over here. Thanks so much.